right, we welcome everybody to the Second Court of Appeals today. To my right is Justice Lee Gabriel. To my left is Justice Elizabeth Kerr. And I'm Terry Livingston. We have two cases set on our 9 o'clock docket. We will likely just proceed from one to the next. Our first case set is Columbia North Hills versus Gonzalez, cause number 216-433-CV. And I have the time you've turned in to our clerk, and we also have the one bench exhibit that you all passed out. So we are ready to begin for Columbia, please. That's for the other case. Oh, sorry. Wrong case, sorry. On the handout. That must be unnerving.
Thank you, Your Honor. I was going to make that clear. We presented no bench exhibit. May it please the court, good morning, Your Honors and counsel. As the court is aware, this is a Chapter 74 expert report case. And in this case, the hospital is complaining about the trial court's abuse of discretion in overruling objections to the amended report, that is the curing report submitted by Dr. Miller after an extension of time to cure, and in denying the hospital's motion to dismiss. Here we have presented several issues showing an abuse of discretion. First, that Dr. Miller, the expert, did not explain why or how an alleged excessive doses of the drug, short-acting drug Lispro, caused Mrs. Gonzalez's injuries or death, and did not explain how an alleged failure to contact the physician at 4:45 p.m. on December 17th, when she had a blood glucose reading of 49, caused injuries or her death. I'd like to proceed, Your Honor, just by starting in a review of the causation standards this court recognized. The causation element required for Section 74351 is proximate cause, according to the Texas Supreme Court in the Marks case. And that means that the defendant's act, omission, or other departure from accepted standards of medical care must proximately cause the patient's injury or death. This court said in the Stork case that an expert articulates that causal relationship as by establishing that the negligent conduct was a substantial factor in bringing about the harm, and that absent that act or omission, the harm would not have occurred. Now, the report cannot be a mere conclusion by the expert. Even at the report stage, the expert has to explain the basis of the statements and link those to the medical facts in the case. And an expert's conclusion that in medical probability one issue causes another is conclusory. It doesn't tie the facts sufficiently to the medical records. And then finally, mere possibilities are also insufficient to support a causation opinion. So looking at the opinion provided in the amended report of Dr. Miller here, he really talks about two alleged breaches of the standards of care by the nurses that proximately caused injury, and Mrs. Gonzalez's death about 5 weeks later. The first is that the nurses erroneously and in breach of the standard of care gave 20 units of Lispro, which is a short-acting insulin, at 9 p.m. on December 17th, and that was in violation of a physician's order that should have only required 16 units based on a sliding scale dosage. And the second is failing to contact or notify the physician regarding the blood glucose reading of 49 at 4:45 p.m. So what we've argued here is that Dr. Miller fails to provide these sufficient causation opinions tying either of these alleged breaches to the injury or death. First of all, looking at the excessive dosage issue, this court considered in the case of Collini versus Postovsky, and I'm sure I mispronounced that, I apologize, 280 Southwest 3rd 456 in this court, the parties talked about this case in the briefing, that when a healthcare liability claim is about and involves the administration of improper medication, the plaintiff's expert has to explain the why and the how that the excessive or improper medication specifically caused the patient's injury. And that was a case about giving continued doses of the drug Reglan that the expert claimed caused tardive dyskinesia. That was a side effect that was noted by the drug manufacturer. And in fact, some of the treating physicians had stated in medical records that the patient's tardive dyskinesia was because of the excessive doses of Reglan.
Kalini was a case against the doctor, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
And this is a case against nurses for administering a dosage that was not ordered by a physician. Do you not see any distinction between those two cases? Against a doctor and one against nurses and therefore a hospital for administering a dosage that was not ordered by a doctor.
Your Honor, I don't see a distinction that with respect to what's required under Section 74351. They still have to show that the excessive dosage, because what the opinion is that the excessive dosage amount, the breach was giving that too much. So what we have to look at is what happened by giving too much, and that's what Dr. Miller never explains. So in that respect, which I think is the
Doesn't he say by giving her too much, she suffered a severe hypoglycemic event that caused brain damage that ultimately resulted in her death?
He makes all of those statements, Your Honor, in a conclusory fashion. He cannot link those to the medical records because, well, for several reasons. First of all, he doesn't explain. He says 16 units would have been the proper dosage. He doesn't tell us what happens with an additional 4 units and why that is excessive, first of all. He doesn't explain when it allegedly led to this low blood sugar event, the hypoglycemic coma, during that time period.
5:15 the next morning.
That's when she was discovered. But his report is completely silent as to anything that occurred between 9 o'clock when she was given the least pro 20 units, and when she was found at 5:15 the next morning as non-responsive with a blood glucose level of 37. He does not explain how or why that dose of 16 would be proper, yet 20 is improper at that time period when she clearly had an high insulin level of 356 when
Doesn't
it was given.
Doesn't he say it's because she had another glycemic event within 12 hours, which precipitated the order that it be 16 versus 20?
His opinion is that the nurses just improperly gave it on under the sliding scale, but that is a breach of the standard of care, Your Honor, not that has caused. He doesn't explain how that additional 4 units caused the problem. He doesn't talk about the causal relationship between that 4 units and the hypoglycemic coma, and the causal relationship then between the hypoglycemic coma on December 18th and her ultimate death 37 days later. He doesn't include any medical detail, for example, about what the insulin medications, particularly this is a short-acting drug, Lispro, and she's found some 8 hours later, 8.5 hours, as non-responsive. So he doesn't explain how these drugs, either separately or together, affect the glucose levels, how an excessive dose of insulin affects the glucose levels, what level of glucose is required to lead to hypoglycemia or hypoglycemic coma. He doesn't talk about what period of time that's required to cause this adverse event. All of those are missing in his report, and he does not tie those to the medical literature or the medical facts in the case. In fact, it required multiple inferences of this court to conclude that the report is adequate, and of the trial court. The trial court, even on the record, talked about, in his own experience, knowing how insulin works in the body, the report was adequate. The trial court obviously and apparently on the record supplied its own knowledge in concluding that the report was adequate. The trial court in this case also considered the argument, Dr. Miller is referring to the statements made in medical records by other treaters, in this case Dr. Nair. But as this court recognized in the Kalini case, even though you have, and what Dr. Nair said is that Ms. Miller suffered a prolonged period of time of hypoglycemia. That is, that particular statement in the fact, statement in the medical record is repeated in the report of Dr. Miller. But referring to those diagnoses or statements of treaters is still not enough to show that the amount, the 4 units of Lispro, again, the short-acting drug, had anything to do with the glycemic condition, the glycemic coma, and then her ultimate death. The doctors don't talk about that. So that's still not enough to supply the missing link with regard to the medical facts that need to be supported and need to form the basis and foundation of the expert's opinion under Section 74351. These types of discharge and admission papers for other hospitals and other doctors saying that she suffered this event is just not enough to provide the link between the nurse's conduct and this coma injury and death about a month later.
What about his second paragraph under causation? He specifically sets forth if the nurses had met the standard of care, which he had explained previously, contacted a physician, or if the nurses had followed all of their physician orders, they would have applied or given her a lower dose of the Lispro. And then he says, in all medical probability, meaning more likely than not, the patient would have not have had the catastrophic hypoglycemic event. I mean, doesn't that tell us causation?
Well, Your Honor, it's a conclusory statement. It's saying that one event caused the other. If the nurses hadn't deviated from the standard of care, she wouldn't have had the coma. He doesn't say what happened with giving her that combined amount. What happened in her body to cause her blood sugar to drop from 356 at 9 o'clock with this short-acting drug to 37 at 5:15, some 8.5 hours later? He doesn't talk about anything like that.
He does talk about how Lispro has a effect of having blood glucose vary drastically upon administering the Lispro. Does he not?
I'm not sure that I'm understanding which part of his opinion.
Does he not say that Lispro has an effect of having the patient's blood glucose vary drastically immediately upon administering that drug?
He does say by combining the medications and giving an excessive dose of the short-acting Lispro insulin, the patient's blood sugar dropped to an excessively low level.
Okay.
But that is a conclusory statement. It's a short-acting drug. The only excessively low level we know about is 8.5 hours later. He doesn't say that that's...
An expert has to go into the metabolic reason that this happens. Isn't that marshalling proof?
Your Honor, it's not. When you're talking about over an excessive medication, the expert has to talk about what happens. Why 4 units? He says 16 units when it was given at 9 o'clock would be appropriate. He says 20 is too much. Why is it too much? He doesn't say.
Well, isn't the purpose of this expert report twofold, to give notice to the defendant of what the breach was and that it how it caused this, to give notice, and then also for the trial court to have something to look at to see if the case has any merit? But it's your opinion that they have to go into great detail of how this caused this to happen to the extent that you just described.
Well, Your Honor, the Texas Supreme Court said in the Van Ness case that with regard to causation, the expert has to talk about the how and the why. And so in a medication overdose situation, you've got to talk about how the medication works and why this excessive amount caused the low blood sugar found 8.5 hours later. We don't even know how long it takes Lispro to act based on this report. We don't know if it happened immediately, as the court is inferring, respectfully, because the report doesn't, it says it resulted in a low blood sugar, but we don't know what that time period was, because we don't know anything from 9 o'clock p.m. on the December 17th to 5:15 a.m. on the 18th.
You've expressed an opinion that the expert report tells us that it's a short-acting drug.
Yes.
So it does tell us something, does it not, about the timing?
It doesn't, Your Honor. What does short-acting mean? We don't know in the context of medication. We don't know in the context of insulin in the body when she had a reading of 356 at the time it was given. All of those correlate together and require that the expert tell us a little more than what happened here. Your Honors, I haven't had much time to talk about our second issue. We also believe that the opinion with regard to the nurses failing to contact a doctor at 445 when the blood glucose reading was 49 was approximately caused the injuries, the coma, or the death in this case. He talks about nothing that happened or why that it would have even been appropriate to contact the doctor between 4:45 and 9 o'clock p.m., that what happened between that time period. In fact, he says the nurses acted and they should have given the Lispro at 9 o'clock. They just gave too much. So with that, Your Honors, we would ask the court to reverse the trial court's order denying our motion to dismiss and to dismiss the case with prejudice.
Thank you, Ms. Faust. Mr. Harvey.
May it please the court. I would like to say it's nice to be back, but frankly, it's not. We would love to still be in the trial court dealing with this issue. But all things considered, thank you for hearing us today. I had in my notes here to go through Palacios and Marshall evidence, but I think I'm going to forego that because clearly this court has written plenty on expert opinions that we don't need to talk about those issues. Though I do want to point out that as was outlined in the Bowie case, a case we've all cited so many times, Bowie says the responsibility of the report is to explain the causal connection. Now, the question is how much explanation is necessary. I want to address the Collini case, I believe it is, the Collini case, in response, and I'll try to work in some of the facts that from our case to address that. Here, there are two major differences in our case and the Collini case. The Collini case was an appropriate amount of drug was given. The question is, should the drug have been given, and did the drug cause this side effect that is outlined in the literature? The expert concluded that the drug did cause the side effect, but gave no explanation of why the drug caused the side effect. Well, that is not our case. The drug that was given did exactly what the drug was supposed to do. The two insulin medications are designed to do just what was outlined in the report, to lower the blood sugar. So unlike the Collini case, this isn't an issue of did the drug cause it. This is an issue of the drug did exactly what it was intended to do. A dramatic difference. But Dr. Miller's report explains to the trial court and now to this court how that happened. The nurses gave too much medication that was designed to lower blood sugar. And the medication was given in too large of amount that caused the blood sugar to lower to too low of a level. Now, it wasn't just as conclusory as that. He specifically had the details based upon the blood sugar analysis that her blood sugar went down to 37. This wasn't just ipsy-dixit, you know, she had a coma because I said so. He relied upon the data of a blood sugar of 37, which he says in his report, a blood sugar of 37 is too low to provide adequate serum glucose for neurologic function to continue, and because of that low level of blood serum glucose, rather, that the brain did not get adequately supplied with the glucose it needed, and that caused the coma and the permanent injury. Now, that is not compounding one conclusion on another. We hear all the time that these reports are conclusory. Experts are allowed to have a conclusion, but that conclusion has to be based on facts. And in this case, Dr. Miller outlines specific facts that support his opinion of why the nurse's deviation from the standard of care caused the injury. His first conclusion, we have a blood glucose that was too low to sustain viable function. Number two, I have an EEG that was done that indicates specific, unequivocal, and objective brain damage. We don't have another explanation, such as a hemorrhagic stroke or an infarction, as outlined in the CT report. And unlike in the Collini case, which this court said, we can't, those opinions of the other three doctors are outside the corners of the report. That's not the case here. We went to the extra effort of providing the trial court, and now this court, attached to Dr. Miller's report, as outlined in his report, that he does say, I'm attaching them, those reports that are showing the EEG results, the CT results, the conclusions based upon the examinations done by the neurologist, the data from...
You complained that you attached those, but you didn't incorporate them. Do you have any authority that says that is or is not good enough?
I have no authority either way, but it's clear that Dr. Miller is referring to the document, and he does incorporate them because he says, under the causation paragraph, I concur with the treating physicians that Ms. Gonzalez sustained a prolonged hypoglycemic coma / event. So clearly, based upon his review of the medical records and the medical records attached to his report, he is agreeing. Now, I have lived for years with a Constancio case draped around my neck. That was my case. And I've had to stand in front of these courts oftentimes to address this. So let me, because I was the guy in the trenches on Constancio, I can tell you, here's what the third court said. Now, remember, they reversed it on other grounds, so that was not the final end of the case. But the court said, the report doesn't say that Dr. Hata, the expert, adopted the opinion of the treater, Dr. Chang, in his report, and therefore were outside of the report, of the four corners of the report, to conclude Dr. Hata believed that the anoxia caused the hypoxia, etc. Not the case here. Lesson learned. We made sure that Dr. Miller addressed specifically that I too agree with what these doctors are saying, that the cause of the event was the hypoglycemic coma caused by the reduction. So, objectively, the data is before the trial court to reach a reasonable conclusion that the facts are present. This court has clearly pointed out, this isn't the time we marshal the facts. This isn't a summary judgment. This isn't a Robinson or Daubert hearing. This is to notify them, what's our complaint? Our complaint is simply this. You took a medicine and gave it to a woman that wasn't supposed to get it in the volume, 125% of what she was, gave her 125% of what she was supposed to get. That medication was designed to lower blood sugar. The medication did lower blood sugar to an unacceptable level, and that unacceptable level of blood sugar caused neurologic damage, which caused her death. Now, this court has recognized in Presbyterian versus Smith, relying on Patel versus Williams, that these chain of event cases, if I recall right, the Smith case was where the guy pulled the catheter out because he was getting the medication that he shouldn't have received, and it caused him to be delirious. I can't remember all the details, but this court went through in detail how one fact led to the other and the nurse's failure, etc. And those cases recognize a chain of events scenario analysis is an appropriate analysis. The same in the Williams case. In regard to the issue on the nurses. In regard to calling the physician, that's the second element of the breach of the standard of care. And I think it's important to recognize there's no dispute about qualifications, no dispute about identification of standard of care, no dispute about deviation from standard of care in the report, strictly causation. So on the second aspect of deviation, on failure to call, Dr. Miller tells us that if the nurses had done what he says they should have done, remember, they're not challenging that he's not qualified or that he doesn't identify, but had he done that, a physician would have been notified and a different monitoring schedule would have been done and a different diet would have been instituted. Well, the appellant says, oh, well, that's speculation. Well, of course we have to presume that when doctors are told about a dangerous condition, what he said was that a reasonable, prudent physician would have done the following things. The very things recognized by this court in the Presbyterian versus Smith case. It allowed that objective standard to move forward. I want to go back to this one final thing. As asked a few moments ago, isn't the purpose to tell them what we're complaining about and how it made a difference? Isn't that the purpose? Well, I do believe, respectfully, that Judge Birdwell is clearly a man that knows the law on expert reports. We know that from having been in his court, having cases with him in the past before he went on the bench. He knows the law. And to say that he is arbitrary and unreasonable in analyzing the law on expert reports and that there's no facts to support his conclusion, I think goes against what this report stands for. We're going to request that you sustain the trial court's overruling of their objections and denial of their motion to dismiss. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Harvey. Ms. Faust, rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. Just a couple of things. With respect to the Collini case, Collini is about giving too much medication and what that caused, and that's exactly what the issue is here. It gave too much Reglan because he continued it for way too long, and that's what that prolonged continued use of it is what the other treating physicians in that case looked at to conclude that the Reglan had caused the tardive dyskinesia. So that's exactly what this case is about. When we look at and the 37 blood glucose reading at 5:15 a.m. on December 18th, that's 8 hours later, we don't know anything about what happened between 9 p.m. and 5:15 a.m. We don't have an opinion from Dr. Miller saying that because we don't have any information during that time, if that's a breach of the standard of care. He doesn't complain about that.
But isn't there no evidence as to what happened during that time period, a result of the failure to follow orders? I mean, she wasn't given additional medicine. She wasn't tested, I believe, during that time.
Well, I disagree, Your Honor. If the court looks at the records that are attached to the back of the amended report and look at what the dosage was required, that dosage was required at bedtime. So it's contemplated that the patient goes to bed at bedtime and gets that insulin dose at bedtime. That happened at 9 o'clock.
It's contemplated that the insulin dose be the appropriate amount ordered?
Absolutely, Your Honor, yes. And that is the breach in this case, that it was an excessive amount. But it was too much because it was 37 8 hours later.
But weren't other factors ruled out through the EEG or EKG that was done?
That's a good question, Your Honor. They certainly would like that to be the case here, but Dr. Nair nor Dr. Miller or anyone else in the case explains about that EEG or the CT scan and says anything about that what appears on that CT scan or EEG is the result of excessive insulin. That is not addressed in any of those medical records. It doesn't, or how or why that a hypoglycemic episode, which is claimed here, caused that brain damage that purportedly is shown on that CT scan. And the CT scan shows no evidence of acute hemorrhage or acute infarction, is what Dr. Miller says. This is not the same thing as saying that the CT scan shows that excessive insulin given at 9 o'clock p.m. caused the hypoglycemic coma.
But for purposes of just for expert report purposes, I mean, I know the answer to this question. You're going to disagree that that's sufficient on these facts to get past the hurdle that the plaintiffs need to overcome.
We think so, Your Honor. Again, Van Ness says, when you're talking about causation, you have to discuss the how and why. The Supreme Court says that. And we don't know how Lise Pro worked. When it was given at 9 o'clock, she was at 356. What happened then? We don't know. When did it get too low? In fact, what is too low? She had 49 earlier in the day. How long does it take to have to be too low before a hypoglycemic coma occurs? We don't know. These are all things. These are general things that should have been fleshed out in the report. Even if the report has to talk about more than just saying one event giving 4 units of Lispro caused a hypoglycemic coma, and that's really all we have here when it comes down to it. Without knowing how hypoglycemia progressed in this case when it was given, when her blood sugar was 356, there's no way to conclude if or how it was related to that insulin administration and when that neurological injury occurred. We just don't have those medical facts here, and the report is conclusory. This court has to fill in gaps by inferring all of that, and that, we believe, is what, respectfully, the trial court did, and Judge Birdwell has been before this court many times on these report cases and absolutely knows this law backwards and forwards, but the record is clear. He relied on his own knowledge and experience about diabetes and insulin to conclude that this report was sufficient, and we've stated that on the record in our briefing. Your Honors, we also just would like to briefly point out they've already been granted an extension of time in this case on the causation issue, so that dismissal with prejudice would be appropriate rather than any remand for a reconsideration of an extension if the court agrees with us that the amended report is deficient. Dismissal with prejudice is required, and the remand would only be for a determination of attorney's fees as provided in the statute. Thank the court for its consideration and time in allowing us to argue today on this case.
Thank you, Ms. Faust. Mr. Harvey, we appreciate all of your briefing in this matter and your arguments today. Your case is now submitted and you all are excused.